A62. Number 2A.
Yes, we have been working all through the winter as a preparation for what we are doing this week. And I'm sure that many have spent a lot of time and thought and devotion to the assignment. And I want to go over this assignment this week, naturally. And I want to bring out first perhaps something that one easily forgets when one is working all through the winter or through the year. And that is that in spite that the study requires thinking, requires that we use our best human faculties of reasoning and correct thinking, that we never forget that we do that out of a great awe before the subject. I always feel that it is necessary that before one approaches each day the study, opens the textbook or whatever is under consideration, that we really fill our consciousness full and plenty with the greatness of what we are achieving or what we are driving at. Because if we just approach the subject with our brain, with our thinking, and not, so to say, with the heart and the admiration and the gratitude for the subject, then something somehow is missing within us, and we are not so much a ground that is ready for a seed to be sown. So I would feel, don't forget to culture also that spiritual side and aspect of our study, so that the thinking and the correct thinking part has not the upper hand in our study, but that it is really only secondary within us. After all, we said, let's approach the study with that spiritual sense of obstetrics, which starts out with that great sentence that teacher and student should also be familiar with the obstetrics taught by this science. And I usually like to stay with this very point and ask myself, now, what is the teacher? What is the student? There is no other teacher really at work when we are studying than the divine mind. The divine mind is its own interpreter. And as we fill our consciousness with that sense that it is not our human mind that is going to study, that it is not our human reasoning that can grasp really the subject, but that it is always the one and the only divine mind ever at work, ever aware of its own nature, therefore ever aware of its own knowledge, therefore ever aware of the all-knowing and all-seeing and all-perceiving mind, then we feel our consciousness that the divine mind within us is really doing the study, is really contemplating the truth. And this makes us much more transparent for what we are considering. The same is true about the student. Who is the student? Well, the student is also that divine mind when it is translated and transformed to the point of the human. That's the student, namely to the point of openness of mind. See, when we translate the divine mind to the point of the human level, that divine mind, that all-knowing mind, appears on the human level as being open for the one mind, as being willing to learn, what the divine mind interprets to us. So that the divine mind student is receptivity to see everything as mind interprets it. And in this way we have a correlation between the divine mind teacher and the divine mind student, mind staying in its own realm, but translated from the point of view of science, namely mind knowing itself, to the point of the student where he is receptive and willing for the divine mind. Then, under those circumstances, the human mind does no more enter in. Human intelligence, human reasoning does no more enter in. Then we have cleared, so to say, our consciousness and have prepared it to the point where mind speaks to mind. Where the mind, capital M, speaks to mind, capital M. And in that realm we can hear God speak. In that realm we understand the divine mind's interpretation easily, because it's mind knowing itself. Well, this is the way I have been saying right now. If I would start all over again, I would put it perhaps again already in a bit different words, but the meaning will be the same. And therefore, each one of you, of us, when we study, actually, I think we should start with that prayerful attitude where we see that only the divine mind within us can understand what the divine mind within us interprets to us. And we can certainly rest in that consciousness to the point as long as we feel it's necessary in order to feel, now I'm at that point where I don't feel anymore that my personal intelligence, my brain intelligence has to learn something and to study something. But that we feel through that prayerful attitude that it is that we are just a sounding board for the divine mind to resound through all its infinite knowledge of mind. So this would be, I would say, a general point in a study anyway. I always felt right from the beginning I was going to John Dorley's class now over 40 years ago that this is the clue to any understanding. And it has impressed me so that I felt if I hadn't learned anything else in that class but this, I would have got out of it more than what one could expect. Because somehow it has stayed with me, and I truly feel that because I have been contemplating scientific obstetrics every day, and usually before I start sitting down and opening the books, say Science and Health or the Bible, that I would first spend quite a time with obstetrics to the point where I felt within myself that actually all human conceptions are out of my human consciousness, that it is eliminated, so that one felt somehow, yes, in the oneness of being, there is just one mind, but that one mind is both teacher and student. It's both that which interprets itself and that which can listen to mind, and therefore grasp and comprehend the message of divine mind. Yes, this is the point I would like to stress again. One can't teach much about it except to bring it to the consciousness of the student and tell him, try it out, try it out. I always feel that the gratitude that one feels for Christian Science is important for the study. That if we approach, so to say, any study without feeling that one is enormously blessed, superabundantly blessed, to be drawn to this study, that then the study, until we do that, that then the study is of no great avail and has no great impact. I feel that one always should study with a sense that we really are under the grace of God, that we are chosen people, that we are chosen people, a chosen consciousness, not many mighties, but really a chosen people, because we can see that this is the biggest thing that is ever going on in the world. That our consciousness and our time and our energies is devoted to the most important thing that can ever exist, to the most important thing that is necessary right now. That there is in the whole world nobody and nothing that is more important than to acquaint our consciousness with reality, as Mrs. Eddy has pointed it out. We really can look around today and say, yes, there are now millions of people in the West also, not only in the East, who can see that reality is immaterial, therefore of a nature that is not material, whatever then that is, and that today now million peoples are engaged in consciousness expansion, in consciousness transformation, in looking into the nature of mentality and religion. And looking around and reading all about these things, one cannot help being impressed how far above Mrs. Eddy's presentation of reality is compared with all the other presentations. They all somehow can see that something new is coming. They can see the turn of the 6,000-year period to the 7,000-year period. They somehow feel that the material age is drawing to a close, and that somehow another age, which is not material, is coming. But what that not material is, that is a great question mark. For some it is some kind of energy. For some it is some kind of psychology, of psychic power. To others it's somehow a mental realm, a humanly mental realm, or even perhaps a supra-human mental realm, perhaps a collective consciousness in the mental, but they are all at sea. They all are seeking for the ultimate reality and can't yet quite fathom it. Whereas Mrs. Eddy towers far above all that, because she has made already 100 years ago the further transition which has to come, namely for her also the mental age has come to a close. The psychic age for her has come to a close, and she already introduced the spiritual age, the age of spirituality, of true spirituality, and not just of mentality. And therefore, we are studying a subject that is far in advance of the age. And therefore, we must not be disillusioned because our teaching does not go afield, you say afield, further, because we are really far in advance of the age. And it is a terrific grace that somehow we are called by grace, as a gift of grace, we are called inwardly to be drawn towards the textbook and the message of the textbook. I always stand in gratitude each day before the fact why should I have been chosen? Just as you have to do it. You are chosen, or you wouldn't sit here. What is it that has chosen you, each one of you, to be drawn to that spiritual study of reality? Why not somebody else? Why not those who are not here? Why not those millions who are not here? And I can't help feeling a terrific gratitude for being chosen, and therefore one cannot help but feel a terrific responsibility for what you are doing and for putting everything into it that is necessary for this idea to take root, so that it can grow, so that it can grow sturdily, so that it is ready when the world is coming, that we can stand, that we don't falter. So let's study these assignments over a few years in all tranquility, in the stillness of the secrecy, hidden away like the babe in Bethlehem, hidden away in the stable, not known by the world. But there it grew, and it grew very sturdily and became strong, and its maturity is without decay. So let's be a mother to this idea every day. Just mother this idea and see the promise of that idea, and it will come. And we must at the moment live by the promise and not by witnessing the success of it. This is our task. It's the task of the mother. The task of the father will then be to enjoy the success, but the mother, she is the one that can anticipate the promise and be glad and happy and joyous in the promise. The world will need us. The world will need everyone that has been devoted to the study of the science of spirit. Each one, in a bigger way than we can expect now. Because once the world is turning to the spiritual, it will be like an avalanche. It will just come in a big way. And we have to be prepared for it. Each one, man or woman, young or old, everyone that is spiritually minded will be needed. So, let's have this whole seminar over these few years as a great preparatory training ground for each one to do and give our best that we have. All right. Now we go to the assignment, and the very first point of our assignment has been, perhaps you take the assignment in front of you, both the study syllabus 2 and the guide for the syllabus study number 2. You have that in front of you. And our first assignment in point 1 was to read over all the sentences where a synonymous term appear in the textbook. What was the reason for this assignment, and how could we fulfill this assignment? Well, last year, this was the main point of our syllabus class, namely to take reference after reference from the textbook on each synonymous term and read those sentences with the one and only purpose to analyze really the meaning of each synonymous term. We did that together, and you did it at home, and we could see that each synonymous term could be characterized by definite spiritual ideas which belong to each one of those seven synonymous terms. We made a list of these ideas, and we're saying that we will add to that list new terms when we come across them, and that each one can therefore elaborate on that list. But we have also seen, when we were reading these sentences, that it was not always very easy to detect through which ideas each synonymous term was characterized. It seems very easy theoretically when you say, well, if you want to know what mind is, you just read all those 700-800 passages about mind, and then you ask yourself, what does Mrs. Eddy say about mind? And you write it down in a word, and then you have a list. But we have seen that this is not so easy as it looks. What was the difficulty? And you remember the difficulty was that Mrs. Eddy uses the seven synonymous term not only intrinsically in their nature, but mostly in combination with other synonymous terms, or with ideas of other synonymous terms. You remember, we could see that Mrs. Eddy would say about mind that mind is power, and that power is intrinsic, a nature of mind, an idea characterizing really mind. But reading the references, we could see that Mrs. Eddy would speak about the power of spirit, the power of soul, the power of principle, the power of life, the power of truth, the power of love, which means that we had to see when a idea, say, of mind, like power, is used in a combination and not intrinsically. So if she speaks about the power of spirit, we can see that power is not intrinsically spirit, because only she uses the power of spirit. But we could see that this is a combination of mind, a power of mind, with spirit, a combination, just as we use the numbers in arithmetic in combinations. And therefore, we had to see when is it a combination and when is it not a combination. Is power of spirit intrinsically spirit, or is it a combination of mind with spirit? Yes? All set. This is the difficulty. Therefore, we were considering last year, over a long period, with dozens and dozens of different examples, we were considering how we could determine when, power is used as a combination and when not. And you remember what was the criterion. Every time I have to think what is the singular and what is the plural. The singular is the criterion. Yeah. What is the criterion of defining when we have a combination and when it is intrinsically? The criterion was that the moment we had a counterfeit of power, say that death says I'm a power, nobody can resist that power, that then death, the counterfeit of life, is determining the use of the synonym. Therefore, in order to counteract the claim of a counterfeit, like death has all power, we have to use the exact fact about death, which is life, therefore use the synonymous term life, no matter what goes with it, be it the power of life, or the law of life, or the irresistibility of life, or whatever goes with it. The synonym life has to be used, and if there is an adjective going with it, or something that strengthens it, like power, then naturally we have a combination. So, it isn't as easy as it seems to be just to read the textbook through with the purpose of getting the tone of a synonymous term. One first has to know how to read those sentences, so that if in the course of reading we come to, say, a statement that spirit is the grand creator, that we know that spirit is not the creator, that mind is the creator. We have to know that, or else we think spirit is the creator. Because here spirit may be used in order to show it is not matter, but spirit which is the grand creator. Or we come across the statement that may perhaps say that soul governs the body in every instance, and we must know that it is not soul that governs. It is still mind that governs. Though she says soul governs, but she uses soul governing the body because the question is, by what is the body governed? What governs the body? Well, the fact about body is soul, because body is the counterfeit of soul, and therefore she has to use soul as the fact about the counterfeit body, and the relationship that is brought out is then a combination. Soul governs. Or she could say soul controls the body, and we still know that controls is mind and not soul. We have first, you see, to get a very good knowledge of how Mrs. Eddy uses these seven synonymous terms in combination with ideas of the other synonymous terms. Before we really can go through that assignment one without going astray when we are studying it. Yes. I'm not quite sure if you are with me, if I have said something that is now so natural already that you feel, oh God, here he is going again, all over the old same thing, or if it was necessary to go over it again. All right.